Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Nate, is Cody Rhodes like the best friend anyone can have? He's got his ankle just brutalized 3 hours earlier, and then ends up limping out, has his ankle taped up, and he manages to fend off a pretty fresh Finn Balor and go after Damian Priest after a grueling main event match against Jay. And I say it sort of like facetiously, and I don't mean it that way. Like, wrestling needs baby faces who come out and help their friends or their allies. And they book Cody, and I think one of the reasons he's over the way that he is they book Cody in a very traditional, altruistic, self-sacrificing, loyal way. And I think it's part of what works. I kind of think it's universal and timeless, and it's such a great juxtaposition to Drew McIntyre, who the commentators today, I think, did a very good job framing during his matches, or Barrett especially brought it up, that Drew has been talking about the grievances and the chip on his shoulder of the way things have gone the past couple of years, but there's an element of truth to everything he says, even if Seth is telling him to let it go and move forward. And so we have Drew, a popular babyface, moving presumably towards heel. I think most people assume that's where he's going. There'll be a break point where fans eventually just say, hey, he took his chip on his shoulder too far. But it's important to have that contrast with Cody, who is portrayed in a way where you're like, hey, I want somebody like that on my side in life. Your thoughts, Nate?
No, I mean, I think it's a good, contrast right now between the two wrestlers. It's like, Drew McIntyre, he's been a great babyface on the main roster for quite some time. Personally, I've always liked him better as a heel. His heel work down in NXT before he got called back up to the main roster after his little hiatus from WWE there was some great work. Even as a heel, when he did come up to the main roster, it was he did some great work as well as on the indies. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what this new incarnation of Drew McIntyre is going to, lead to. And hopefully it's, some sort of a, championship run, presumably against Seth, maybe not necessarily Seth, whoever dethrones Seth or something like that, but presumably for the World Heavyweight Championship. I'm really in favor of that with Cody. I think you're right. Probably the best friend anybody on the main roster could ask for. And like, I do kind of say that a little jokingly, but also, like you said, it's kind of also true. I mean, not only did he get Jay the job, but on Raw for, he's also been in his corner. And he really proved that tonight by, coming out after the attack and, it looked like a pretty brutal attack on him earlier in the night. And, as you said, he comes out limping, ankle taped and all of that. I like the way that they're kind of presenting Cody here. And I don't know one way or another, but it almost feels like Cody has a lot of say with his character. I'm assuming he does. Because just knowing what I know about Cody and seeing interviews and things like that, he has that old school wrestling mindset, and he does kind of feel like a traditional old school, heel, babyface right now. I personally really like the presentation. WWE, I was kind of afraid WWE might try to change Cody Rhodes a little bit from, what he was in AEW and before that. But I kind of like the fact that they've just let him kind of evolve that character a bit more and kind of continue on that same path. I'm all for it.
I agree with you. Well, I don't know if agree is the right word. But I agree with you that Cody is a compelling heel, and it's intriguing to imagine.
Did you mean Drew?
No, I'm saying Cody, because you had mentioned a few minutes ago that you like Cody best as a heel, right?
I said Drew best as a heel.
Oh, really? Oh, well, then I scratched that. Well, I will just say, Cody's a really good babyface, but I am intrigued with him. I'll just go through with my thought anyway, that I'm really intrigued with Cody eventually as a heel because he's so popular as a babyface. It'll be such a shock if that day comes. But I was going to follow up by saying things are going well enough with Cody. And, I mean, there's been a couple weeks here and there where I'm like, oh, is he losing it? Is the what do you want to talk about thing getting a little old? Or is he, you know, sometimes he seems a little, like, I don't want to. I say this a lot, but sometimes he seems a little unself-aware and grandiose in a way that might eventually rub some fans the wrong way or wear out its welcome. But it's this fine line because having that grandioseness is what makes him feel like a big star despite being a mid-carder for a long time in his prior run in WWE under with one gimmick after another that was not main event and didn't work out. And so – and then, of course, you know, big part of the transition was establishing himself outside of WWE, kind of like Drew McIntyre, too. And so part of what is potentially going to cost Cody his popularity is also what makes him so popular. And I am impressed with the tightrope that they're walking, even if every once in a while I think they stretch it a little bit. And I'm like, uh-oh, is this going to cause some fans to backfire? But I just don't think today's WWE fan base is eager to boo Cody or has any reason to do so at this point. But it could wear out its welcome. It did in AEW. But I think he will be managed well enough that it won't happen. But if it does, I think it'll be fantastic. Drew McIntyre, similar. And he's almost on this. The fans didn't reject Drew. The AEW fans rejected Cody eventually. They're not rejecting Drew, but he did get a little cold. He cooled off from the pandemic days. What I love about this Drew storyline is they are owning reality, but they're owning the reality within the narrative structure of WWE. Nothing they're saying has anything to do with social media or something in real life that sort of contradicts or has nothing to do with what's happened on TV. They're telling this real story, which is Drew peaked during the pandemic without fans in the building. And then when the pandemic was over, he had hit his apex and started to cool off. And then Cody came along and kind of took Drew's role, as I've talked about. And it's intriguing that it was interesting to watch and wondering, well, where does this leave Drew? And I think the best story with Drew is to embrace that that's what happened. Now, they're not ready for Drew versus Cody, so they're not talking about Cody replacing Drew because they're doing Drew and Seth right now and a lot of other moving parts with Drew. But I really like that what Drew is saying. And again, like I said, Wade Barrett underlined it. There's truth to everything Drew is saying. So the issue with Drew when he eventually goes heel, which presumably is what's going to happen, isn't going to be that he's wrong. It's going to be that the things he's right about, he's reacting poorly to by either belaboring the point or overreacting or crossing some line. And I think WWE's doing a good job taking their time telling that story. And it's really fun to see. And there's so much to talk about with Raw each week because there's such a dynamic going on with Rhea Ripley, you know, negotiating with Seth and negotiating or chatting up Drew and initially going after Jay. And you just don't know where it's all going to end up because there's a case to be made. And Rhea Ripley's making it to all these different key players. So, and Drew going, I'm not going to come out and save anyone. And the juxtaposition with Cody is Cody's happy to come out and save people, even with a taped ankle, at a time when Drew is making his case that I'm in it for myself. So those two seem like they might be on a collision course at some point with a very long story arc that WWE has in mind. And it's fun to watch. I think they're doing a really good job with it. And when Drew goes all out heel, again, presuming that is the plan, and I think it is, I'm with you. I think that he's going to have a new edge to him that's going to add a lot of value compared to what we saw since the post-peak pandemic era babyface Drew, where you're like, man, is he just going to kind of peter out? And I think they're revving him up in a way where he's going to be a really valuable player. And unlike Roman Reigns and the story they're telling with Seth too, with his back and all that, Drew seems like he's just getting started in his career, like, or his peak is that he's in his prime and his prime has years to go. And I think fans will like that. And I think it's smart of WWE if they have re-signed him, which I don't think I've seen a definitive headline on that, and that was the story going on. But it seems like they are really investing in him properly and effectively. Nate, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I mean he's absolutely somebody that I think they could build around. He's such an effective heel that I think he's going to get a ton of heat, and then it's going to just come full circle, and people are going to just kind of like they do with Roman Reigns right now. You love to hate him, and it's going to just kind of wind up cementing him as a bigger star, I think. So
he's going to seem tough to beat when he turns heel.
Oh, yeah.
And if he's a champion, people are going to go, who can beat this guy? And in a way that's different than Roman, because Roman doesn't defend very often, and his matches, well, I think brilliant in so many ways, are not bangers in the traditional way that Drew is able to have them. So Drew can end up, and he's got a long way to go. I'm not saying he's going to have the peak run that Roman Reigns had, because Roman Reigns has an X factor in charisma and the whole bloodline magic that is going to be hard to match or beat if you're Drew, no matter what stories are told and what you do. But he's talented enough and on a good path that it could be right in the same realm, but with the bonus of he's going to defend the title more often and have better traditional matches as opposed to the way Roman tells a story with body language and facial expressions and all that.
No, I think that absolutely makes sense. It's Drew, I think he's a great storyteller, anyway, but his matches are going to be more, kind of traditional wrestling matches probably even, a little kicked up a notch, but yeah, I think it's going to be, if they do get there to, put the title on Drew, and assuming Reigns is still the champion, I think it is going to be a nice, contrast. Yeah, sure. We may have two heels as champions, but, we kind of have, like you said, one that is probably going to be more of a fighting champion. And then, Roman Reigns kind of like picks and chooses his opponents.
We'll pause there. There's more to talk about because we had the possibility of Priest, the suggestion of Priest cashing in on Roman, and then if Drew joined Judgment Day, maybe Priest wins the Undisputed Universal title. Well, Drew beats Seth and becomes world champion, and then Judgment Day becomes more powerful than Bloodline ever was. I mean, there's a lot of things in play, and we'll explore that more as the show goes on. But let's pause and formally introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 23rd, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Post Shows and the Wade Keller Podcast. Tomorrow, the flagship edition of our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, will feature Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. If you have questions or topics you want us to address, now is the time to send those in. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Meanwhile, you can, if you're live streaming our show here after Raw, email us or call us. If you want to call, you can use your touchpad and call 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. If you have a rotary phone, awesome. That's so cool. And you can dial that same number. But then it'll be hard to push one on your phone to let us know you want to be on the show, so you'll be in trouble.
Those analog signals, they don't like switchboards.
So yes, exactly. So better yet, call on your cell phone. 347-215-8558 and push one on your keypad to signal that you want to be on the show. Otherwise, you can email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. A lot of other developments tonight. We had Logan Paul. We had Crown Jewel developments with the women's fatal five-way hype for next week's Raw with some matches being set up and more. We'll get to all of that as the show progresses. But let's pivot to our first phone call, and that is Brad from Florida calling us early in the show. You are up first, Brad. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Hey, Wade and Nate. Nate, always great hearing you on any of these post-shows. You are one of my favorites, and Wade, always love listening to you, man, as you know. Tonight was a weird night for Raw, only because, you had the football game on, obviously, which I
be careful, I'm watching it later. Be careful, I'm what, Brad? I'm taking my headset off.
Not saying anything. Not saying anything. Not saying anything.
Thank you.
Not saying anything.
I had
put your headset back on.
Valid.
Yeah.
All right.
You had the football game on.
He's got his fingers in his ears.
Yeah. you had the football game on, but you also had a Raw in Dallas where the Dallas-based baseball team, the Texas Rangers, were in a Game 7 against the Houston Astros, another obviously Texas-based team, to go to the World Series.
Yep.
And you saw those guys with the Texas Rangers uniform sitting ringside, or at least the jerseys. But I just saw a lot of people in the crowd. I honestly think the crowd was preoccupied. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, your city's about to go to the World Series, and you're in a Game 7 against the biggest rival possible, the other Texas team. So I noticed that a lot in the crowd. Like, I was just looking for this because I was thinking about it, and I was, like, paying attention to it. Like, a lot of people just looking at their phones. And, like, you obviously always see people looking at their phones, but this was more than usual. Like, you could tell they were, like, streaming a game or, you know, like, they were, like, watching their phones. So I think that it's something to do with kind of the lackluster-ish crowd tonight in what is a great sports city and a great city for WWE normally. You know, but I just thought that was, you know, just kind of interesting to note. Now with Cody, I really want to ask you guys this because of the way that Damian Priest attacked him and the way that they, you know, obviously set up this match for Crown Jewel. Do you guys think that there is a possibility that this ends up being a feud that gets into briefcase territory, meaning that Cody has a chance to win the briefcase from Priest? Now, I don't know what Cody would offer him, but I don't see Priest with the briefcase, if he still has it by January, being in the Royal Rumble necessarily. And I don't see Cody necessarily being in the Royal Rumble. I'm wondering if at Royal Rumble there is a briefcase match and this feud continues from Crown Jewel all the way through Royal Rumble. I was wondering what you guys thought of that, just because of the viciousness of the attack on Cody, and that could be a good mechanism to get Cody back to the Bloodline story, and obviously Priest mentioning the story tonight, you know, mentioning his story and the Bloodline and all this stuff. So I was wondering what you guys thought of that as an option, and could that potentially happen?
Is that let me jump in because I want clarity on what you think. It's just like Priest and Cody one-on-one briefcase on the line at Rumble. Is that what you're suggesting? I just want a clear picture of what you're saying.
So what is
the context where Priest would do that? Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, why would Priest do that? I mean, you can cash it in and win a world title when a champion is beat up. What could lead to that, logically?
I could tell you. So Rhea has made a deal with Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre takes the title off Seth at Crown Jewel. He has it. And there's some sort of deal, which Rhea did reference tonight with Seth, where there's some sort of deal where they protect that championship for him. And, maybe Priest feels I can't cash in now. You know, now my boss, Rhea, is basically saying I can't use this. And I don't know what Cody would have to offer. Like, maybe it's like, you know, if you lose, you join the Judgment Day, Cody. Or, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean? I think that would be too ridiculous. But my point is, I just felt like there was a lot of setting up for something like that.
Yeah. So as you're talking, I have lots of thoughts, so I don't want to lose track. I don't think they're going to do it, and I don't think they should do it. I think the Money in the Bank should – the person who wins it, it's so valuable. There should be no – and they earn it, you know, in a match. There should be really no circumstance. That's such an absolute. There should be such a rare situation where anybody would either volunteer – to give away something so valuable, or be forced to do it. And that's why I asked you, because I'm like, okay, do you have something in mind that I'm not thinking of or that would work? And I'm still not there. Like, I just don't think there's a situation where and even if there was a way they could do that, I just don't think they're going to do it. But the thing that also is on my mind as you're talking is it seems like Priest is heading towards being a babyface. So – but, I mean, not for sure. But, I mean, they've been protecting him and portraying him in a way where that certainly is a plausible direction where they could land, especially with Drew going heel. That might work, and I don't I'm still not sure if they're going to actually add Drew to Judgment Day or when he turns heel. It doesn't seem like a great fit, but maybe it works. But then, you know, eventually you want Rhea to be a babyface, so maybe Drew just forms a different – I don't know. Genuinely intrigued with what they have in mind, and I don't think it's obvious, but I think it's likely to make sense whatever they do. So all that said, I'm trying to come up with a scenario, and I want to get Nate involved in this, where maybe Priest is going to cash in, but that's when something happens that costs him the chance to cash in. Like he cashes in the briefcase. He's about to enter the ring to get a sure win over Seth. But then Drew gives him a claymore at ringside, and Priest can't even answer the count, so he loses the briefcase. Boom, Drew and Rhea celebrate together with Balor and Dom, and Priest is laid out on the floor. Again, that's I'm not trying to fantasy book as much as trying to lay out a possible scenario illustrative of a way that they might do that, but there's a lot of chapters that need to be told and played out for that to make sense, too. So, Nate, a lot of things there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the idea of the Money in the Bank briefcase switching hands, just in general, not necessarily just in this context. But I think it's happened once or twice before, if I'm remembering correctly. And I don't know. Like you said, I think it should be a rare occasion where it happens. Like if you've done it once, wait at least 10 years before you do it again. You know, maybe tease it or something, but I wouldn't even do that. I don't even like that idea. Because, you know, as you said, it's something that they've earned, and I don't see any real the only situation that I can think of that would put the briefcase on the line is if, you know, somehow you know, Cody fires Rhea up enough where she's like, yeah, fine, we're going to put the briefcase on the line. And then Adam Pearce is like, okay, and immediately makes the match. And, you know, then it's set in stone, it's ironclad. And Priest is like, whoa, I didn't agree to this, you know, or something like that. And even then, you know, you've got contract signing. So wouldn't he need to sign a contract, whether it be in the ring or out of the ring? So there's all these. Yeah. You know, there's all these different things that kind of just don't really add up. But it's you know, certainly an idea, but I don't know if it's the kind of the right direction to go.
I mean, Brad, I like all the moving parts. I like the intrigue.
Yeah.
I like that everybody has like these different selfish interests and possible forks in the road of how they're going to handle things. And so, yeah, I mean, I trust that they have something in mind for sure, that a landing place, a destination for all this. And I mean, I'm willing to be content to watch it play out. I don't need to know, but it is fun to speculate. But unlike a lot of storylines where it's like either this or this is going to happen, there's enough going on here where it's not just like two choices and two obvious paths that they will take once they choose that fork in the road. So it's fun. Brad, what else?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to follow up on or change topics? Yeah.
Yeah. Really, I was flipping a little bit back and forth with the baseball game. Did Seth not come out tonight? He didn't, right? He was just backstage.
Oh, good point. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't get the crowd singing Seth's song. I bet they did in a dark match. That'd be my guess. I don't think we have anyone attending tonight, or at least no one told us ahead of time they're going to call, but that's my hunch.
Yeah. So Seth didn't come out tonight, but why do you guys think it is that they keep having Seth mention Roman Reigns? Like it's been happening for 2 years since that match at the Royal Rumble that they had. We do have Survivor Series coming up where it's champion versus champion. Now, I don't think Seth is going to have the championship with Drew, you know, this match against Drew, unless something wonky happens with Rhea or something and Drew eventually gets a rematch for some reason, but I don't know. But I think there is some foreshadowing into the possibility of Seth retaining due to something that Rhea does to either screw Drew or, you know, try to help Drew, but it doesn't work out as planned or something like that. But do you think there's a possibility at Survivor Series that we get a champion versus champion match in Seth versus Roman? Because we already know,
No.
No.
That's
okay,
way
you do
too
not
soon.
Think that's
I,
a possibility.
I, I won't even let you finish your thought. I think they're playing long ball with that. I think they just want that to feel like a match that's not played out and overdone. They don't want it to be Cena versus Orton. They don't want it to they don't want it to feel that way. When it happens, they want it to seem like it's been years in the making. But I also think it's a way to put Seth at Roman's level. Like, if you want to be talked about in the same sentence as Roman, and you want to address his title reign as the new world champion, trying to build a level of prestige with your title reign. So that's my thought. What do you think, Nate?
No, I'm pretty much with you. I think it's too early for that, especially with how new the World Heavyweight Championship is. It doesn't have that prestige. It kind of just feels like the, hey, this, I'm not Roman Reigns, you know? And I wouldn't want to put that title against Roman Reigns, because you're right there comparing apples to, you know, apples to apples, where they shouldn't be at this particular moment. I think just a lot of people wind up comparing the two of them for a lot of reasons. You know, obviously their Shield, years and kind of how they've, they're kind of just tied together. Their careers have been kind of tied together. So I think there's just a lot of times where they'll come up and, a lot of people just compare them, you know, in conversation or whatnot. And I think that's kind of probably why they're acknowledging it on TV, so kind of keep it in fresh in people's minds, so they can eventually kind of get to that match, you know, further down the road, whether it be for a title or, you know, something along those lines. But I think that I think Wade's right. They're kind of playing the long game with that one.
Brad, back to you.
Yeah, my very last thing, you know, just along, I don't want to be so redundant, but it was brought up tonight, you know, with Cody not finishing the story and by Damian Priest and all this stuff. And you have all these moving parts with the briefcase and with Damian cashing in potentially on someone and all of this stuff. I mean, in what world does Cody get that rematch with Roman based on the point he's at now? I mean, he's not going to win the Royal Rumble again. I mean, you want to say Elimination Chamber?
Why doesn't he win the Rumble?
I just don't know if fans would like that. I mean, I guess they would.
I think that's a distinct possibility. I mean, the fact that they keep bringing up that he's not, you know, he hasn't finished the story, I think that's because they want people to want Cody to finish the story, as opposed to think WWE wants you to forget about it.
Okay. No, that's a very good point, and I see your point. And no, thanks for taking the call, guys. I'll let you move on to some other stuff, but really appreciate it.
All right,
thank
great.
You, Brad.
Yeah, Brad. Good topic. Thank you.
Hope to hear from you tomorrow night.
Yes, Nate. Talk about that for a second. Halloween Havoc tomorrow night. What's the plan for the post show?
Yeah. So PWT Talks NXT on the Daily Cast. I believe we have a full house. I think. We'll have, and of course, I'm probably jinxing it, because as soon as we say we'll have a full house, somebody's going to dip. But I think we'll have a full house, Kelly Wells, Bruce Hazelwood, myself, after NXT tomorrow night. So you can catch it on the Daily Cast, either the recording, or you can call in live at 515-605-9345. We go live about a half an hour after NXT goes off the air, but we'll be discussing Halloween Havoc, which... It looks like it's going to be, we're kind of like lined up for a pretty decent show here. We have, as we talked about tonight, with Becky Lynch defending her title against Cindy Hartwell, we have, she's also defending it again tomorrow night against Lyra Valkyria. We saw Lyra Valkyria show up, during that match against Cindy Hartwell tonight. We've also got Gigi Dolin and Blair Davenport in a lights out match, which I'm not quite sure what that is, but we'll see when we get there. But the thing that I'm really looking forward to is the debut of don't call him Brian Pillman Jr. Call him Lexus King. I've really liked the vignettes that they've been doing for Lexus King. He's kind of trying to shed all of the shades of Brian Pillman. Like, you know, he's heard his entire life how great, you know, Brian Pillman was, but he never knew his father. He was 4 years old when Brian Pillman died. And so he's trying to shed all of that and become a whole new person, and really, really compelling. So Yeah, so tomorrow night, first night of Halloween Havoc, and then next week we've got the second night, and we'll be right there in the Daily Cast to talk about it.
Check that out, everybody. There'll be a link to the live post show at pwtorch.com at the top of the written report. So that's a real good way to just click the link and listen to the live stream and also get the info on the phone number and the email. So Nate Lindberg, good to have you on tonight. I want to actually pivot to talking about what they did with Lyra Valkyria and Becky Lynch and Indy Hartwell. It was an awkward situation. You're promoting Becky defending the title twice, but trying to make it seem like there's a chance that Indy would beat Becky. And, you know, not just make it a foregone conclusion, but also not stretch the credibility of your announcers and everybody else doing it. And so, I mean, I thought they handled it well. I mean, Jackie Redmond's like, Becky, you're going to defend your title twice in two nights. And I'm like, no, she's going to defend tonight, and whoever wins will wrestle tomorrow. That was a little presumptuous. I don't think it was a spoiler because, obviously, you know, Becky was a heavy favorite. The one little thing they could have added, and I don't think it's a big deal because, of course, you know, yes, they said it's about Indy never lost, and they could have made it seem like Indy was had a real chance to beat Becky, and they could have put more effort into that. I don't know if it would have been worth the squeeze, but they could have had a little something with Indy and Valkyria where it was like, oh, there's an issue there too. I could see this going either way. Did that cross your mind as you're watching it? Were you thinking, hey, they should make it seem like Indy has more of a chance here, or is that just trying to do something that probably doesn't have much of a chance to really resonate, so why bother?
I was kind of hoping they were going to go a little bit in that direction because they've kind of sort of teased it on NXT TV a little bit. Indy's shown up and she's and that's kind of how the match here tonight, you know, came to be is, you know, she showed up on NXT TV and, you know, she was like, hey, you know, I never lost this title. And you challenged her for it at the same time as like Lyra's trying to challenge for it. So there's definitely a bit of a story there. So I kind of was hoping that they might kind of get Indy involved a little bit more in the post-match angle or maybe give her a promo at the end of the night that, you know, maybe not turn that into a triple threat because I don't want to see a triple threat. I'd rather see a singles match between, you know, Lyra and Becky, especially between Lyra and Becky. But at least maybe give her some sort of a reason to get back into the title scene. I'm an unabashed, like, Indy Hartwell fan. I dig her sense of comedy, and I like what she does in the ring. But, I mean, I don't think I'm probably in the minority, is I guess what I'm trying to say. When she was the NXT champion, it almost felt like it was a, hey, you've been here for, like, I think four and a half years at this point. You've done a really good job, and, you know, here you go. It just kind of seemed like a bit of a prize, and I was really looking forward to seeing what she could do with that title as champion. Unfortunately, she got hurt and had to relinquish the title. I would really like to see Indy kind of get back in there and kind of have some story told that, you know, would make sense to, you kind of get her back in the mix after this match of Halloween Havoc against Becky and Lyra.
What do you think of Becky so far, kind of straddling between Raw and NXT and being this fighting champion in the way that they've explained why she's on NXT and having essentially two women's titles at the same time on Raw? And has it come across as Becky sort of bigfooting up-and-coming developmental talent? Or because that is, you know, a risk if you take somebody who's an established WrestleMania level main eventer and a legacy star in the women's division showing up and sort of like, I'm going to beat all these up and comers. How have they avoided that? If you think that they have,
personally, I think they have. I think it's A, just because of the popularity of Becky Lynch, everybody was just like, oh my God, Becky Lynch is back in NXT. And they just like, I personally, when her music hit, or actually, I don't think her music hit. I think she just showed up in a vignette with Tiffany Stratton she showed up on the Titantron, rather, when Tiffany Stratton was in the ring, still as champion one day. But still, well, the first time she showed up, like, even I, like, was, like, standing out of my chair. I was really, really excited to see her there. So I think, A, it's the popularity, but, B, she also has this this lineage, this history to NXT. She was one of the four horsewomen, alongside Bayley, Sasha, and Charlotte. And she was the only one that never won the big one. She never won that NXT title. So that was kind of the story they told. You know, she was going back down there to win the title. And I really actually kind of like the story of even how they got there. Tiffany Stratton, as NXT champion at the time, was listing off NXT champions in a promo in the ring. And she listed off Becky Lynch as a former champion. And people, of course, went on Twitter right away and lambasted her for it. And then she came on a promo, I don't know, maybe a half hour, 45 minutes later. And she's, you know, like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 you know? And it kind of, that's what kickstarted the whole thing. I think they've done a really good job with it so far. They have, it doesn't seem like it's too overkill. She, even though she's winning a lot of her matches and obviously she's champion, she's still really giving. She's making stars while she's down there. As have all of the main roster stars pretty much that have come down to NXT. They've really done a good job as presenting them as, veterans, but giving them a reason to be there and making it feel like they're not big, kind of taking somebody else's spot, a younger person's spot or new person's spot. They're weaving them into the stories pretty organically. I think it's helping. I mean, I think it was the match between Seth Rollins and Bron Breakker for the World Heavyweight Championship on NXT TV. I think was the highest rated episode of Raw in the year, and then the second highest was when Becky Lynch, won the title. It's definitely getting eyeballs on the product. It feels like the NXT's, and I know I'm going a little long winded here, but. It feels like NXT, the direction for NXT is changing. NXT 2.0 went back to developmental. And it almost feels like they're still trying to stay developmental, but kind of boost ratings and become a little bit more of a sports entertainment B type show that intertwines with the main roster. And if that is the direction they're going, I really like what they're giving us so far. So I'm much more on board with NXT than I was a little over a year ago with NXT 2.0. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are based on viewership. You know, AW viewership's down this year. Raw viewership's down this year. But NXT viewership's up. So, yeah. Some of that with NXT was sort of underperforming its cable network and time slot with a lot of potential if they just kind of flipped a couple switches. And they flipped a couple switches, and you know they've added star power and they've cross promoted more, which they were, you know, for whatever reason, felt like maybe it'd be oversaturating things or it wasn't a priority, and they've just said let's see if we can increase NXT viewership without oversaturating the WWE product on the airwaves, and so far it seems like it's successful. I don't sense at all that like the drop in Raw viewership is people watching NXT instead of Raw. I'm sure there's some people out there who are like that, but. It more feels like taking advantage of the synergy. We have a related email to the Becky discussion we just had. JB from Detroit says, do you think it is possible that Rhea Ripley's interaction with Seth Rollins tonight could be leading to Seth somehow leveraging Rhea's recruitment of him to get Becky a match with Rhea at one of the major shows in the not-too-distant future, like Survivor Series or Royal Rumble or even WrestleMania? I know that Seth and Becky haven't recently been portrayed as an on-screen duo, but the subtle interaction and foreshadowing of Rhea and Becky has been obvious, and the interaction with Seth tonight only furthers the connection between the two. And there's, you know, definitely been, you know, allusions during, you know, Seth's storyline with Shinsuke Nakamura. There'd be images of him and Becky, and he'd talk about, you know, his family and going home to his wife and being so sore and blah, 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 all that kind of thing. So they're not running from it, but yeah, JB is right. They're not, you know, overtly having them appear on camera together as a married couple, so to speak. Nate, I'll throw to you. What do you think of JB's scenario of Rhea meddling's a word, but trying to set the stage or pave the way for a match with Becky?
You know, I hadn't quite thought about it. I don't hate it simply because I would love to see a high profile match between Becky Lynch and Rhea Ripley. I don't care about the story. I just want to see that match. But I personally don't want to see too much of a connection between Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins. I know for a fact that Becky doesn't like it. I'm pretty sure that Seth doesn't like it either. I know I just recently watched an interview where Becky said she didn't like it, you know, and kind of wanted to be her own person on camera and not, you know, part of a couple, as they were portrayed, you know, was that, God, it must have been 2-3 years ago at this point, maybe even longer than that. But I think, you know, everybody knows it. It's kind of like, you know, they can't hide it at this point. I mean, kind of like with Ricochet and Samantha Irwin tonight, you know, they didn't like overly talk about it or whatever, but they did mention, you know, that, you know, he's, you know, that they're engaged and whatnot. I think that if anything, you know, just kind of keep the fact that they're together and they're married and they, you know, they're a family, like maybe make a nod to it here and there, but I don't necessarily want to see them in that husband and wife storyline. Unless there's a really, really good and compelling story that kind of draws them together, like, you know, like Edge and Beth Phoenix, for example, you know, when they were up against the Miz and Maurice, like that was really cool. You know, that's some cool like husband and wife stuff I'd like to see. But other than that, I'd really just rather see them kind of have completely separate careers and maybe just acknowledge the fact that they're together, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if Seth said something like, you know, Rhea, it's pretty rich of you to try to, you know, to try to mess around with me or recruit me or plant seeds with me when I know ultimately, you won't feel that your title reign is validated until you beat Becky or something, you know, something like that. I mean, he could say something like that, but I don't think it goes much further than that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. JB also says, is old hobbling Cody an example of Cody trying a bit too much? So it's an interesting alternate take to my opening commentary, which is, you know, Cody's the best friend you could have in pro wrestling. You know, got an ankle injury, hobbling to the ring all taped up. But, you know, I mean, as I said, sometimes it does seem like Cody can be a bit much. Last week's ring outfit pushed the limit, might have pushed the limits of some people. And, you know, what do you want to talk about? And I don't know. There's just a, you know, a vibe that Cody gave off that got out of hand in AEW. You know, the gender reveal was not great judgment. Some, you know, the whole Cody-verse thing, and, you know, Cody would go off on these sidebar tangents where it just felt like he thought everybody, he's the guy, you know, at the college reunion or the party with friends who just assumes everybody will not get tired of hearing anything that comes into his mind that he can speak about while everyone gathers around and hangs on his every word. And he's at risk of that. I think that is part of what hurt him in AEW, is that sense of, boy, this guy sure thinks we just will be enamored with any random tangent that he says. WWE's reined that in. And you know, that's, it's worked. You know, I mean, what Cody has real strengths of a character, and one of them that's consistent with everything else he does is, yeah, you can beat me up, but I'm going to tape my ankle, ice it, and if someone's in trouble, in peril, I'm going to come out at my own, at risk of doing more harm. I didn't think it was a bit much. Now, is it walking that line? Yeah, but that's what they do with Cody. They walk that tightrope. They walk up to that line, pick your cliche, but they don't cross it. Even if they lean over it, they pull back. So Cody's character is, by definition, I think, going to push the limits of some people thinking that's a little much Cody, or that's a little much WWE the way you're pushing him. But it works because I think they know when to pull back. So that's my take on it. I just think this was a good friend, a good ally stepping up. Nate, how about you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, what I like to see in a good babyface is somebody that's going to step up and do the right thing no matter what, whether it's, you know, against somebody that is a friend or a frenemy or a foe. You know, the first example that springs to mind, whether it's a good one or not, was when Stephanie McMahon was up on the Undertaker symbol. And even though Stone Cold's feuding with, you know, Vince and hates Vince, hey, it's the right thing to do to go save Stephanie. And he goes out and saves Stephanie. As a kid, like, I still remember that. Still sticks out in my head, like, hey, he did the right thing, even though he hates her dad. So that's kind of what I like to see in a babyface. And I'd just assume see, really somebody that's getting pushed as a strong babyface like Cody kind of have those morals and things. Cody's not the first one that, you know, has come out injured to save somebody either. I think he just kind of gets scrutinized a lot more than most, for a lot of the reasons you said. Sometimes he can certainly be a little, I don't know if insufferable is the right word, but it's the one I'm going to use right now. I don't know. I personally like the direction that they're going with him, and I don't think that it came off the way. I think it came off as, like you said, just kind of him trying to be a good friend to this guy that he brought into Raw.
JB also says, are we finally at the point of Judgment Day saturation? And again, I think with JB, I get him asking these questions, but I think they're pulling it off. I mean, Raw is very heavy on Judgment Day, but I'm enjoying Raw more than I have in a long time, and a big part of it is the kind of unexpected rise of Rhea Ripley, who started off a little overwhelmed by the big lights after coming up from NXT. On camera, it seemed that way. Behind the scenes, it was definitely what people observed in her, and it didn't help, you know, Vince McMahon being her boss instead of Paul Levesque, and I think it helps having Paul Levesque be a more calming boss than McMahon was early on. But she's growing into this role really well, and Dominic's been a unexpected big star, and then you have Finn Balor, who sort of felt like he was a little cold, and I mean, he's not the most compelling of everybody in Judgment Day, but he's playing his role well. You have the JD McDonagh X factor, and then you have Damian Priest having the best run of his career, period, and shining, and it's not just, you know, one leader with a bunch of people in lockstep playing a certain role. Like, everybody sort of has their own side project. You know, Balor's got, oh, JD's my friend, and I want to try to win him. I want JD to win over Priest. You got Priest with Money in the Bank briefcase. You got Priest and Balor with the tag titles. You have Priest, you know, as much as I say, you know, oh, maybe they're going to head towards a babyface turn with him. He did low blow Cody, and that got brought up, and he seemed to delight in it. So it's like they're not, like, on the verge of him being a babyface right now. And then Rhea Ripley and Dom, you know, speak for themselves in terms of what they've done. So to me, no. I can't remember watching Raw and thinking, oh, Judgment Day again, or this person for Judgment Day again. Maybe I'm on the extreme end of embracing what they're doing, but to me, I don't sense people are, I mean, maybe JP, but I think JP would be in the minority. I think they're telling good stories with multi-layered characters at this point, and so many different connective tissue dynamics that are in motion, along with people outside of Judgment Day, with Seth and Drew in particular. I guess JD's sort of an outsider. It's working for me. Nate, how about you?
It's 100% working for me. I mean, they one of the things that I really appreciate in wrestling is when you take one story and you kind of weave it through the entire arc of the show. And they do that with the Judgment Day just so beautifully on Raw as well as NXT. A little less so recently, but you know, now that Dominic's the NXT champion again, he, you know, kind of showing back up a bit more. But it's I don't think it's kind of oversaturating yet at all. I mean, just tonight, you've got Logan Paul coming out to the ring. Now, nobody likes Logan Paul. I mean, a lot of people like Logan Paul, but you know, usually when he's coming out, people are booing him. Everybody was booing him tonight. But then Dom comes out, and those boos for Logan Paul were like, I mean, threefold for Dom. So he's got some heat that, I mean, God, some of the greatest heels in the industry you only dream of at this point, in 2023. Not riots like the old days, but, hey, he's certainly got some great heat right now. Like you said, Rhea is in her prime. Damian Priest, he's completely rocking it. And it's crazy to me that Finn Balor's probably, like, the least – noteworthy in the group right now, and kind of just being that veteran and allowing everybody else to shine, which is, I think, the role that he's supposed to be playing. And I think he's doing it, you know, beautifully. The best factions don't really feel like there is, but I don't want to say feel like there's a leader, because, I mean, you know, DX had a leader and Evolution had a leader and all that stuff. But it's when everybody feels important, everybody feels like they're not just, you know, a lackey, and everybody in Judgment Day actually has not just one story, but probably seven between Raw and NXT. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. And I think they're pulling it off brilliantly.
Yeah. All right, let's go to another email. Zahn in St. Louis said, first thing I'd like to point out about Judgment Day is that it reminds me of Jimmy Hart's First Family, where you have a group of heels making a long show seem interesting. So there's a nice long callback. Don't know if he means Memphis Jimmy Hart, I guess, probably. So that's cool. That was Jimmy Hart at his peak, by the way. You know, definitely peak. Was pre-WWF cartoonized Jimmy Hart. But more on point here, so that's a email in support of what Judgment Day are doing, and it does help keep a long show interesting. I don't know if we have a lot more to add on that, Nate, but Azan more on our side than JB's.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that, no.
Yeah. Then number two, your thoughts on Akira Tozawa's performance on Raw of late. So tonight he had an out against Bronson Reed, and then he slapped him, and Bronson's like, all right, you've been warned. And he put up, they gave him a little bit of fight. He actually got a comeback. I thought he'd just get squashed in 10 seconds. He lasted like a minute or so, maybe a couple minutes. And I don't know what they're doing with him other than they obviously, you know, Paul Levesque and others like his comedic touch. They think it's important to have some comedy, and he hanging out with Otis and Chad Gable and Maxine gives them somebody new to kind of play off of. To me, Tozawa seems like kind of cartoonish to a level of being demeaning and like childlike in a way that I'm not a fan. Like I get that people find him funny and you know, some people do. And I get why. To me, it's just too child. He's this adult being portrayed as a child with over the top facial expressions that doesn't have the type of subtlety or charm that is what I look for in comedy and pro wrestling. There's no cleverness to it. It's just laugh at this man child. However, they gave him a little more of a dimension tonight in that he did stand up to Bronson Reed, and he did want to prove he could be better than step up in ways that he hasn't recently. So we'll see. I don't want to say in Paul Levesque I trust on everything, but there, you know, you want to give him a chance to show what they have in mind, and maybe they do want to rehab him a little bit and elevate him beyond what they've been doing in the 24/7 title situation and just, you know, having him be a punchline without dignity, I would say, is what he's mostly been lately. Maybe they're trying to get him out of that rut and into something else. Obviously, they just, you know, on a personal level, are supportive of him being part of the show. Nate, what do you think?
No, I'm kind of where I think I'm somewhere in between. So like I'm kind of with you where it does kind of feel like it's a bit of a demeaning type of a role and almost kind of stereotypical or you know, I feel like a lot of times with, you know, any sort of wrestler of Asian descent, like WWE just doesn't quite know what to do with them. I mean, Shinsuke and Asuka might be, you know, some of the, you know, outliers there, but, you know, thinking back, I mean, granted this is years ago, but I mean, you know, the original Kaientai and, you know, things like that. So I don't know if it might be something along those lines or whatever, but given what he has been given, I like the way he's at least portraying it. You know, like for instance, last week, I forget what the heck they were talking about, but you know, you had Alpha Academy talking to somebody else backstage, and because I was just kind of like in workout gear in the back, like huddled up with his hands raised, like in a bit of a squat position, just kind of, you know, stepping to the left and stepping to the right and stepping to the left and stepping to the right, and just kind of like looking like he's going to warm up, but he's staring straight off into oblivion. He's got this blank expression on his face while like everybody else is having this heated conversation. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah.
So like he's definitely pulling off what they're giving him. But like I said, I certainly hear where you're coming from with it kind of being a, there's certainly a ceiling on it. And, you know, it's a little demeaning. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I say. I mean, I get why people find him funny. If they think, hey, he's talented, he's loyal, he's a nice guy, we think there's a way to break him out of this one-dimensional man-boy character who's just the butt of jokes into something else, and we're seeing signs of that, and they're committed to it, I think he might be valuable, and it might be something that can win me over. So I'm open-minded to what does seem like a commitment to do more with him. But I don't want it to just be him making over-the-top childlike facial expressions and being the butt of jokes in a way that sort of seems, like he's beneath. he's not a full person. He's not. Yeah, I just – be
exactly.
Careful with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, number three from Azan. 5 years from now, where would you like to see Indy Hartwell? Nate, that's your beat, Oof. Indy Hartwell.
Yes.
What are her strengths? What are her weaknesses in the ring, on the mic, as a character? And where would you like to see her?
So me personally, I'd love to see her like have some sort of a main event title run. I can see it maybe happening, but I don't know if it's going to be like a Charlotte or Becky or, you know, Bailey type or Alexa Bliss level type of a run. It's probably going to be, you know, if anything, more of a token run, kind of like the NXT title run felt like. I think in 5 years, if she's still in WWE, I think she is still going to be on the main roster. I'm hoping a little bit more elevated than what she is. But realistically, and I hate saying this because Indy's my girl, I don't know how much higher her ceiling is. She's, you know, I think she's got a great wrestling mind. She has some great comedy and comedic timing. The stuff that she did with like Gargano, Candice LeRae, Dexter Lumis, and Austin Theory back down in NXT with The Way was hilarious. It was one of my favorite things in NXT from week to week to week. And she always kind of felt like the weak link of the group. Like she had still like great timing and everything, but she still felt like everybody else kind of surpassed her a little bit. I think she's kind of come into her own a little bit more since then, but she's between her mic work and in-ring skills. I think she may be where she's going to be. She might go up a little bit higher, but on the totem pole. But I think we're kind of seeing what we're going to be seeing at Indy Hartwell.
I'm really with you on that, and there's no shame in that. Like I think,
yeah,
I think
everybody can be a champion.
Yeah, you don't want everyone to seem like they should be a main eventer. And it's just like, well, who's getting cheated out of being in the main event? Like you want people who are, you know, rock solid role players. And I think she can be a rock solid role player. I mean, I think what she's asked to do, she does well. Yeah. Do you have anything else? Oh, yes. He says WWE looks like they recognize something in Ivar that could be useful for Raw. So yeah, Ivar has we've talked about it. You know, he impressed people with some of his recent singles matches, and it's obvious that would be the case. I mean, he was given time and he's been showcased. It's hard for somebody who's been in a tag team for a long time and not a dominant tag team like the Usos. You know, it was a challenge for Chad Gable even to be taken seriously as a tag wrestler, American Alpha and then with Otis. So it's a challenge, but he is he's been good. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, can you, does he, if he keeps the same character, well, fans always see him as one half of a tag team that is just sort of filling time until his partner gets back. Like, AEW has that challenge going on right now with Kyle Fletcher. With his partner being out, Mark Davis, they're pushing him as a rising single star, and he had a showcase match with Kenny Omega last week. And but they weren't a featured tag team for a long time, being defined down. I also think on the WWE side of things, they see Ludwig Kaiser as a potential rising single star, kind of along the lines of how AEW is looking at Kyle Fletcher right now. Ivar is in a different spot. It's more, you know, I think a challenge of like an Xavier being seen as a rising single star. Can people recalibrate how they feel about him if that's all they've seen in him? But he's been good. He's been, like, really good. And so, yeah. Well, Nate, what do you think?
So first, I'm just not sure, is Eric out with an injury or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had the pleasure of seeing Warbeard Hansen on the indies. Back before he was Ivar,
yeah.
I've actually got to meet him a couple times. Good guy. And I've seen what he's been able to do just as a single star, you know, on the indies. He's obviously still teamed with, what was it? Roe
yeah.
was his name
yeah.
back then. He's still teamed with with Eric, but, they went by completely different names. But a lot of times he would have his own, he'd kind of have his own run and not in the tag team. I think he's a very dominant, like, in-ring competitor. I think he wrestles a little bit of a different style in WWE. I mean, a lot of people obviously do this WWE style of wrestling, but he can be a lot more intense than he is in the ring currently. And he's already showing, you know, signs of intensity and things like that. I think he could be a compelling single star depending on how they play this gimmick. I kind of liked the vignette that they showed tonight, but it's like the Viking Raiders have been really, I feel like, defined down in WWE. Like on the indies, they were awesome. But, you know, as what was it, War Machine. But,
yeah.
You know, in WWE, they've really been defined down. But if they're able to kind of tap into what they did as War Machine or even some of their early stuff down in NXT, then, yeah, there might be something there for, you know, a decent, mid-card kind of, you know, run there for Ivar until Eric heals up.
Yes, I agree, yeah. I mean, they see something in him. You know, they might, I mean, you hate to say, you know, you don't like to lose your starting job to injury, they always say in sports, but they do say that, Nate. I know that's not your sports, you know, team sports is your thing. You tell me that.
No.
But they say that. You don't want to lose your starting spot to injury. You don't want to lose your tag team spot due to injury. But if Ivar takes off, if Kyle Fletcher takes off, I mean, well, their partner's out injured, I mean, then give the partner something else to do in a similar role. But the partner should be happy for the elevation of the wrestler left behind when there is an injury. And we've seen that with New Day over time, you know, when one or both are out, the other wrestle singles and, you know, they have a chance to showcase. So yeah, it's cool insight that you had that background watching him too.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's shift to our next call. We'll go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, good to hear from you. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
So for me you know, the face off with all the women and stuff like that with Rhea and all that stuff was like, it was just a brawl. I feel like it just happened. I feel like this match came out of not really nowhere, but just feel like it was kind of random, super fast, just for them to be on the show, for them to have some type of situation or problem because this match just came out of nowhere from jumbling this match together. So they wanted to try to create something. And so with this whole Nia thing, it's like, it's just, I get why she's in this match, but if it's a way to turn Rhea Ripley babyface and mission accomplished, this woman's getting big cheers no matter what. She's, you know, people don't like Nia as it is, and it's not really. So I don't know if that's their plan, but if that's the plan, then maybe she's gonna is that going to be out of Judgment Day then? And keep thinking maybe Damian Priest. Could it also be Rhea Ripley down the road and not be part of Judgment Day at some point as well, because how over she is as Mick Foley was, one of the baby faces with Becky Lynch somewhat too, because I just feel like she never gets booed. So I think about this whole conversation with them and with the women itself and what they're going to do with Rhea Ripley in the future, all that stuff.
Yeah, so Nate, looking at what you've seen with Rhea Ripley in NXT and now where she is as of this week and in recent weeks in WWE, we asked about Indi Hartwell. Like, I kind of take what Kyle said. Give us kind of a little more short-term prognosis, but also expand that out to where is she in 2, 3, 4, 5 years? Does she have the potential to be as valuable of a centerpiece act, regardless of gender, as Becky Lynch and Charlotte, for instance, have had a chance to be in of kind of their generation of NXT wrestlers? And is there anything about what she's doing now that surprises you based on the range and the peaks and valleys of her journey in NXT?
Yeah. So, okay. There's a lot there. In terms of like what she's doing right now, I am over the moon with everything Rhea Ripley's doing. I'm on record for the last few years on PWT Talks NXT is saying that Rhea is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, female wrestler. And watching her go from actually one of the first things I ever did for the Torch was cover the Mae Young Classic, and watching her in the Classic as that first year where she just looked like, essentially a Charlotte clone, a Charlotte wannabe, to now being this, kind of gothic, just superstar is been incredible. It's been a great transformation. She's in NXT, she felt like a complete and finalized product. But then you then see what she's actually able to do here in NXT. You know, if I kind of like think back, and granted, I haven't actually gone back and like watched some of her old stuff, but just kind of thinking back, she didn't quite feel nearly as at ease and on the mic and just, kind of cutting promos and things like that as she does now. Everything she's doing in front of the camera just feels super, super organic. And just kind of from the heart, it doesn't necessarily feel scripted. Doesn't feel like she's afraid or nervous or anything. She just feels like she is in the zone right now. In 2, 3, 4 years time, I think she absolutely has the potential to be a big, big star. Some, kind of akin to Charlotte or Becky. I'll even throw Sasha out there, even though she's not, or Mercedes Monet now that she's outside of WWE. I think she certainly does. One of the, I have a lot of friends kind of in the LGBTQ community, and I know every single one of them knows who Rhea Ripley is. I see memes and, in those groups and everything about, Rhea and Dom and things like that. So she's reaching a group of people and a mainstream that, a lot of people don't. And it's that crossover that saw success for John Cena and The Rock and others. So even if I'm not saying that's an avenue she's necessarily going to pursue, for acting, but she's starting already crossover into kind of, mainstream or at least outside of the wrestling world. So I think in a few years time, she could definitely be, a big moneymaker or a bigger moneymaker for the WWE.
Yeah. I think she's got real, real high upside. And for all the reasons you listed, I just. And then I think she's got, from what I've heard, she's someone you want to invest in. She doesn't seem like somebody who's going to let things go to her head or end up being difficult to work with or challenge management in ways that feels a little bit out of step.
Matter of fact, it's been a couple of years ago at this point that this particular call took place, but Kelly Wells or myself, one of us would jump on one of the NXT media calls usually before or after a pay-per-view or something, and there was one time that Triple H just basically came out on one of those calls and said that she is the just utmost professional backstage. So I think that is also really going to help her, you know, with her career, because she doesn't seem like she's the type that would let it go to her head. She seems like she's the type that just, she wants to be there. She wants to learn and grow her career.
Yes. And that, you know, when you're doing as well as WWE is, it works in two ways. One, you don't need to put up with people who are going to create headaches, who are in the midst of a push, going to, you know, just end up being a head case or a problem. But also, part of the reason they are successful is they weed that stuff out. You know, I mean, the especially under Paul Levesque, the modern WWE, and Paul Levesque's grown up a lot. He's matured a lot over the years. He's made a lot of mistakes and done, you know, boneheaded things on air and off air in the past, and had some bad influences at times when, you know, the low points of some of his friends in the clique. He's risen above all that, and he's learned from by watching Vince McMahon how not to be, and he's wired differently. And the NXT experience, you know, put him in a very different mode. And I think he sees, you know, himself in a different way now than he did back when he was a wrestler. And, you know, his ego got a little out of hand. It drove him to success, but it also was a little much at times. And so part of, I think, what he wants to build, and frankly, it's been the way WWE's been for a while, is they want a locker room full of people who everyone in the locker room is rooting for to succeed, instead of people being jealous or being a divided locker room. And I think that is the mentality in WWE behind the scenes. It is not in AEW. AEW's, you know, hasn't done their due diligence on some of the people they've brought in, or they brought people in who had some cachet, but they had baggage. I think Tony Khan there's been a few instances where he's not brought certain people in because of due diligence, but other times he's brought people in and it was, you know, I called it. You know, I knew it was going to not work out. Mm-hmm. And the structure and leadership isn't there to overcome it. So part of why WWE is successful is they're getting behind people like Rhea Ripley and taking some chances at times to exclude people who aren't all in the way that they need to be, or aren't professional on and off camera, behind the scenes, on the clock and off the clock. So, that's why I say all that, to say that WWE is thrilled that Ripley is succeeding the way that she is. And it gives them, you know, leverage when somebody like her succeeds to hold everybody else to a high standard in that way. All right, I'll throw back to Kyle. Kyle, what else do you have for us?
It's cool that, like I said last week, that Rhea is now doing something incredible and interesting within the women's division. It's nice to see her being, because I know how good she is as a character, and now she's finally making the women now feel like they mean something, because she's probably part of it and make me kind of care about whether else happened on women's division with them, because Rhea has been pretty much doing Judgment Day stuff, and now finally gives her a chance to grow as a singles wrestler, as a part of the women's division. I'm happy about that. So I think now let's get to this whole, you know, Becky, Lyra, and the Hartwell thing. It's cool, nice to get to see Becky in the match with, so like, Indy Hartwell, so they give her like a chance and opportunity, and then have respect afterwards, and then go face to face with Lyra, getting ready for their match as for tomorrow's NXT. And, you know, also hear a lot of people saying that, you know, having Jay come out there to come face to face with Becky as well tomorrow night. Who knows what's going to happen there, but even her probably potentially dropping the championship to Lyra tomorrow night. But in terms of guess for tonight, it was a good way to test, not test, it was a good way to have like Indy Hartwell being over with Becky, where she's give her like a chance to shine and grow, to hopefully see more of her as well on TV moving forward after being with Becky. We would say that entire match and segment with, or face off with Becky and Lyra as well, with all that happening there.
I didn't talk about that.
So, sorry, talking about Becky, Lyra potentially,
yeah,
dethroning. Okay.
And how she was used tonight, too. You know, how you think she did.
Yeah. So, like, I thought that, you know, kind of her showing up on TV tonight was a good idea, you know, just to kind of promote the match for tomorrow night. One thing that I really need to give WWE credit for recently is a little bit more promotion of NXT, really just acknowledgement of NXT in general on the main roster. You know, because there was a time where, man, they barely even tried to talk, they even barely talked about NXT on Raw or SmackDown. I like the fact she's in the crowd tonight. And, you know, she got involved in the post-match angle. So it kind of builds a little bit of intrigue for the match tomorrow. I like this, and I also like the story that they've been telling just in general with Lyra and, with Becky. You know, Lyra, she basically approached Becky backstage a handful of weeks ago and, you know, said, like, you know, she looks up to her as a, you know, fellow Irish wrestler. Evolved from there. I think she could potentially dethrone Becky. It seems like that might be the direction they go. Plus Becky's also, you know, main roster talent, making main roster money, showing up on NXT. Granted, she's still showing up on Raw too. She's kind of pulling double duty, but I don't know how much longer they're going to want to have, you know, the NXT title on her and whatever. Granted, I also said the same thing about Dominic, and now here we are, like, what, 3 months in? Granted, this is his second reign, but he only lost the title for a week. I don't even think it was a week. It might have been just a few days when I think about it. But regardless, I don't know if they don't want to have Becky kind of in NXT much longer. I could see that happening, but I think that Becky is probably going to wind up retaining here, and then kind of extending this story out a little bit further, potentially to like Royal Rumble timeframe. But we'll see. We'll see what
maybe
happens.
Maybe deadline, she may drop it. I had a thought, how long is Becky be champion before? I was like trying to map this out for her. You know, I've been thinking December for a while for her to drop the championship, and now they have deadline. They just announced it's going to be back because they'll be back. So maybe around that during that show, and then they can start this. They can start the slow burn of her of even more tension between Becky and Rhea that they did do it for last week. That's what I've been thinking for the last week. I was trying to think myself how they're going to take the title away from Becky. It'd probably be, I was thinking December before deadline even existed of a pay-per-view. So that's what I'm thinking. So is that possible, probably?
Kyle, let me ask Nate about that. What do you think about the timeline for Becky as champ? What are the options? Do you fear her holding it too long or dropping it too soon?
So I personally would like to see her have a relatively meaningful and lengthy run with the title. For a couple of different reasons, partially selfishly, I just want to see Becky in NXT, considering it's a show I cover. But so there's that. But I also, the NXT women's title was one of the most protected titles in NXT or in WWE for a very long time. That title really didn't change hands very often. And when it did, it meant something. And it in the 2.0 era with Mandy, it kind of felt not so much. So now kind of having it back on Becky, who's a, you know, bona fide star, or I say back on Becky, just on Becky in general, who's a bona fide star, big, you know, big, big, big name. It really kind of puts more gravitas and some more, weight around that, on that title. It makes it mean and kind of feel a little, more important again. So I would like to see her have a bit of a run, maybe to the December timeframe, as Kyle said, Royal Rumble, maybe potentially into the WrestleMania, stand and deliver timeframe and drop it to somebody like, Lyra there or, something along those lines. But I think it's at the very latest, I think that's what it's going to be is the WrestleMania season. And I think the soonest could potentially be dropping it to Lyra tomorrow night, though I give that a pretty low chance of happening.
All right, Kyle, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Something else I was going to talk about, Drew McIntyre, Rhea Ripley. Like, where is this going? Where is this leading to? Is this leading to a potential Jordan Judgment Day? Or what this settled tease they've been doing for the last few weeks with Drew and Rhea has been really interesting. I don't know where that's coming from. And then Rhea could be with Seth as well tonight. So it's like, what is happening here? What is Rhea trying to do here? It's interesting. It's very, I don't hate it. I just find it fascinating. Like, well, I don't know what she plans on doing. Is it for David Priest, stuff like that? I don't know. Is that, we think that's Leah too. It's just so fascinating what they're doing with Rhea, with Drew and Seth tonight and the last few weeks with this. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree, Kyle. It's fascinating, and I do not have an answer. I don't even have a top theory or top two theories. This is a compliment, not a criticism, but it doesn't make sense. Like, there's nothing about the scenario where it's like clear where it's heading. And it doesn't make sense because Rhea seems like she's destined to be a babyface. Drew McIntyre seems like he's turning heel, but I don't think he wants to turn heel and be in a faction. It seems like he should be, you know, I mean, but obviously they got something in mind. And, the Matt Riddle situation changed the dynamic of this. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of course correcting, not course correcting, but course augmenting and maybe there'll be a couple chapters of this where you look back and go, well, that didn't make sense, but I guess they had to, you know, do it a different way than they originally planned. But I just don't know. We talked about that earlier, Nate. I don't know where it's going, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it as long as, you know, they're not just winging it with no resolution in mind, because they'll figure it out when the time comes, and when it comes, it won't make sense. I think they've got something in mind, and we'll evaluate it when it happens, but it's not obvious.
No, it's definitely not. And, you know, I, as you said, it's certainly a compliment to them. I so often am able to at least somewhat predict what's going to happen, or at least have an idea of what's going to happen in the storyline or whatever. And I really don't here. And because as you said, it really doesn't, none of it really makes sense. So, yeah. Yeah, so I'm, which is good. It's intriguing, and it's going to try and, you know, hopefully it's those storylines that kind of keep people, you know, tuning back in week after week. So, so yeah.
All right, Kyle, anything else you want to bring up?
Well, let's talk about Cody. I never really talk about Cody because I don't care about the guy. But it feels like with Cody and what they're doing, what they're trying to do this. This whole injury angle again, just like they did with Brock Lesnar. What's with that? Can he just go into a match with Damian Priest without being injured? Like going again to Saudi Arabia twice now with an injury they did back facing Lesnar at Night Champion. So what's that? I don't get that. I don't know why does he have to be injured in the face in a match with Damian Priest? Why can't he just go in there normally? So, but that's just it for that. They struggle.
Thanks, Al. We have to be cognizant, even if I am complimentary of Cody being the best friend you could have in wrestling. I'm covering the same territory I did earlier, Kyle, but I think there's a chance, and we've seen it in an email and with Kyle, it might be a little too much for some people. Cody fighting through injury and being there. And I think they're cognizant of that. I think they're going to manage it. I think they're going to walk that tightrope, and we'll see if it works or backfires. But they want Cody to be the babyface in peril, fighting from underneath, getting beat up unfairly, still, but not sitting on the sideline or milking the injury, and doing, you know, being heroic and being that person. It's dangerous, but it also is a tried and true way to portray a top babyface. And so far, so good. I don't know what else to say, Nate, other than you can't. They're swinging for the fences with him. You know what I mean? Like, you can swing for the fences and strike out. You can swing for the fences and have a warning track out, but you're not going to hit home run unless you swing for the fences. And that's what they're doing with Cody. They're swinging for the fences, even if it backfires a little bit or in a big way. But they know if it backfires, he can be a tremendous full of himself heel. But at this point, I think they're managing it well. Anything else you want to add to that, Nate?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, they're kind of yeah, because like I said earlier, he can sometimes come off as a bit insufferable and stuff. But, you know, I really don't have a whole lot to add, I guess.
Yeah. Let me just touch on a few topics we haven't yet, and we'll wrap up. In no particular order, Nick Aldis shows up, or Adam Pearce showed up on Friday. Nick Aldis shows up today. all this is they're portraying him perfectly. They know what they have with him. He is an alpha male personality. He can't help himself. He comes on strong. He comes on almost too self-assured. And they're playing into that. They're not miscasting him. This is what he's good at. And I'm really enjoying what they've done with him so far. And I'm not a big fan of GMs, but it's been long enough since they've done it. And it's in new hands under Paul Levesque. So I just think, let's see what they have in mind here. But the juxtaposition of Pierce being a frazzled, I mean, Pierce, if he was animated, which would have cartoonish sweat beads just popping out of his head constantly for the stress he's under. And Nick Aldis is so calm, cool, collected, well-dressed. He's big. He's muscular. He's tall. He's alpha. But smarmy. But not in a cartoonish way. Just, man, this guy, I don't know. It's working for me. It's very early in the process. But him showing up and, you know, chatting away and, you know, Pierce going, hey, I said watch the show. Don't cavort with my talent. And he's like, oh, I'm just being friendly. The dynamic with Pierce and Aldis so far is really good. I mean, I've been a big fan of what Pierce has turned into as an authority figure, one of my favorite authority figures of all time in wrestling. And because they don't overuse him, and he's this disheveled, nervous middle manager, but in a way that feels consistent with what you might see a manager at a fast food place or fast casual place or a restaurant who's just a little overwhelmed but trying to keep everything together. And, you know, or a less visible place in an office job. All this is very different, particularly they did tonight. Nate?
All right. I missed the last, like, sentence you said there.
Yeah, just what do you think they called it? So tonight and in general.
Yeah, so I personally really like the way that they're portraying him. You know, like you said, he comes off as, you know, intimidating, very full of himself. You know, one of the things like that came to my mind tonight was a Daniel Craig James Bond, like just kind of that kind of presence to him.
That's good. That's good. Yep.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, it's almost criminal right now that he's not getting much reaction. I mean, he got some boos tonight and whatnot, but, you know, like when they kind of first debuted him.
I'll jump in and disagree. I like that the crowd doesn't quite know what to think of him yet. Like, I like that they didn't just hit people over the head. He's a heel, boo him. Like, people are like, who's this guy and what are we supposed to think of him? And I don't know. So to me, like him not getting a reaction, I think people are a bit, I think they're leaning forward. They're not leaning back. When he's on the screen now, I think they're interested in who this guy is and where it's going.
Oh yeah. No, 100%. What I kind of meant was like, because he's such an unknown talent. Like, I mean, you know, I've seen what he's been able to do in, you know, NWA and, you know, on the indies and things like that. So it's like, I kind of know what to expect, but, you know, nobody really knows who he is in you know, the mainstream WWE audience. So I was kind of, I guess that's kind of what I meant. It almost felt criminal. Like when he didn't get a reaction, cause I was like, oh, finally we're getting Nick Aldis in WWE.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they kind of keep playing him the way that portraying him the way that they're portraying him. I think he's going to potentially be a, you know, pretty popular GM, you know, whether it be popular as a heel or as a face, but I think he's going to be an entertaining GM. You know, he's great on the mic. As you said, the complete kind of opposite to Adam Pierce right now. So I think it's going to make for some interesting dynamics between the two of them. They're obviously building up for brand warfare Survivor Series, which I really got some foreshadowing of that tonight with, you know, the back and forth between the two of them. Even starting on SmackDown, which admittedly I haven't watched SmackDown in its entirety yet. I've seen some clips, but so I think that's probably where it's going is, you know, some brand warfare Survivor Series once again, anyway.
All right. Let's see. Oh, the contract signing with the women in the Fatal 5-Way. We haven't talked about that at all, and I thought they did a good job with this. You know, the conundrum is, how do you put the focus on Nia Jax as a heel without turning Rhea Ripley babyface and not having Raquel Rodriguez seem like she's lost in the background when she's the one babyface who they want fans to cheer and they're trying hard to get her over? You also don't want to diminish Shayna Baszler or Zoe Stark too much in the process. So that's the negative. All that is present, and I don't think they overcame any of that. But for all the criticism and just go away heat that Nia Jax has, she's really good embracing that. You know, like, she knows that's the vibe with her, with fans, and she's mm-hmm. just loving it. She's like, hate on me on social media, boo me at arenas, say whatever you want, I don't care. And if she's going to be around, that's what you want her doing. You want her to be a force of nature who embraces the vitriol that people feel towards her. And she is, and she's doing so effectively. They're using her really well. And so then you have Ripley, and, you know, the question is, is this part, you know, we wonder what's going on with Rhea and Drew and everything with Judgment Day and her destination. Part of it is, what are they doing with her and Rip and Nia Jax? There's something in very specific in mind that I've been told that Paul Levesque has planned for why he brought Nia Jax back, even with some baggage and some question marks about whether it's a good idea and some people maybe not endorsing it internally. There's something very specifically he wanted to use her for in order to get to a greater good in his mind. And is that turning Rhea Ripley babyface in this context? I don't know. Or is it more of an attempt to transition to have Nia Jax beat Ripley, get the belt off Ripley, in a way that's sympathetic for Rhea, that then puts her on a course, in a different course, but then leads to Raquel Rodriguez beating Nia Jax, because that's their next attempt to get Rodriguez over is, well, she fans can't help but cheer for her if she's able to overcome Nia Jax, who dominates. So there's a lot of things at play here, but I mean, I'm not in general in favor of like 3- and 4- and 5-way matches, but this, I think, has been done well to build up to this match with this sort of, not five random people, but this diverse mix of people put in a position where even Adam Pearce is like, I don't normally like to reward their behavior, but I don't see any way to solve this other than putting them all in the ring at once. And I know Ripley is very smart going, and I can beat any one of these, but 4-on-1, I don't, you know, that's management's out to get me, or it's the only way any of these women can imagine beating me. Is that situation. So, Nate, what do you think? I could imagine you being on a different page than me on this.
Actually, I'm kind of really right with you. There's not much that I disagree with you on. The only thing I was actually going to just say, in the interest of time, I was going to say, I agree with you. And I was going to bring up another point, was that, you know, out of everything that Rhea Ripley is involved in right now with, you know, her, with everything with the Judgment Day on Raw, on NXT and all that, in my mind, her in this Fatal 5-Way match defending her title is one of the least important things that she's doing, or at least focused on things that she's doing. I'm curious to see if it's the same, coming across the same for you, because it is for me, and it's almost like I kind of feel like it's an after, I don't want to say afterthought, it's not the right word, but it doesn't feel quite as important as the rest of the angles on the show, which potentially could play into, you know, hey, I wasn't quite focused on this match, I was focused on this other stuff, and so I lost, you know, and then she could kind of tell that story as to, you know, losing the title if she did, you know, in the match or something like that. But is it coming off like that to you as well?
I think it works fine on a parallel track. I don't, obviously what she's dealing with Judgment Day and the bigger picture feels like a bigger deal, but she's got a lot going on. They're asking her to do a lot, but to me it doesn't feel like it's cheapening the title. It feels like she has gigantic odds and she's juggling a lot of things. And I think it's kind of building her brand or her identity that she can do all this, that she can be speaking for herself in a qualified, credible way with four people coming after her, but also, you know, being the, you know, unstated, well, you know, sort of stated leader of Judgment Day. So I think it's working, but it is a lot. It's a lot that they're doing at the moment. They're,
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. Okay. So let's see. Logan Paul and Dom hanging out together. That was a fun moment on Raw tonight. What do you think of that?
You know, I really enjoyed that. So I'm not a – I don't want to say I'm a huge Logan Paul fan because I'm not really – matter of fact, there was one point in time where I was like, I can't stand Logan Paul, Jake Paul, and all that. But once he kind of started in WWE, I started to look into him a little bit more, and his podcast, Impulsive, kind of kept popping up on YouTube. And just listening to him talk about the business and his – just how – in love he's become with the business, I have nothing but respect for him as a wrestler. He's able to come into, just a handful of matches under his belt. And every single one of those matches, he's done things that I'm like, wow, you haven't been wrestling for 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
So he's an incredible talent. And he knows how to get people under people's skin. To kind of like, it's funny because Dom comes out here and I'm thinking they're trying to maybe get Logan face or something with how much heat they've got on Dom. I don't know why I wasn't thinking Logan was all of a sudden going to start ragging on Ray with Dom, but I don't know. That just wasn't where my brain was. And then that's what obviously happened. I thought it was great. You get some additional heat on Logan Paul from that massive heat we were just talking about with Dominic. But I thought the icing on the cake for the heat for Logan Paul was bringing Samantha Irwin back into the mix. I absolutely love Samantha Irwin. Her work on on the announcements is just incredible lately. I just recently watched an interview that she did with Chris Van Vliet, and just she seems like such a sweetheart, and just absolutely loves the business. So for me right now, I'm kind of on a little bit of I'm fanboying out a little bit for her in my everyday life, I guess, just kind of recently in the work she does. So kind of Logan Paul going back to having her announce his name in that match with Ricochet and then Ricochet coming out. I thought that was a nice touch, nice callback. And I'm wondering if it's going to lead to Ricochet being in Dom's in Ray's corner. And I'm assuming it might lead to Dom being in Logan Paul's corner for that match.
Yeah. I'm curious what they have planned for that match and that finish and the fallout from it. And I did not see Logan doing the callback to Samantha, but it made sense. Ricochet showing up to defend the honor of his fiance made sense. Dom and Logan associating as Ray and Ricochet associate, it's good. I mean, I could see it resulting in a tag match, obviously. I don't know. I mean, Logan painted a picture of him being U.S. champion. WWE wants to get publicity. And Logan certainly has earned it more than, say, David Arquette, you know, but if you're looking for headlines, you want somebody as good as Logan, who has earned your respect, being a secondary champion. You don't want David Arquette winning the sole world title. So, you know, they could do that, and it's a way to just transition Ray, you know, into something else and have his U.S. title reign end in a way that gets WWE a ton of publicity, and you can do rematches or tag matches. So, yeah, I mean, but Ray might win because Ricochet cost Logan the match, but then that would mean they're going back to Ricochet-Logan match, and I don't know if they want to do that, but they could. It'd be good. So, yeah, again, this is one of the things where both of the major directions this could go both seem plausible, and I can see the pros, you know, the positives in doing so.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just talking about publicity, I mean, you know, his podcast, I mean, I'm looking at his YouTube page right now. I mean, he's got anywhere from, you know, 650,000 views all the way up to, like, you know, 4 million views on his most recent, you know, videos.
He'll catch up to us someday, Nate, if he works hard.
Yeah, no, exactly. But, I mean, you know, where it is a video podcast, I mean, man, he just puts that title right out in front there, and now you've got a whole bunch of people that are probably, you know, not necessarily wrestling fans that – you know, are Logan Paul fans, but they see that title there. Oh, what's that about? You know?
Yep. And I have periodically asked people in WWE how they feel about him, and it's good. You know, people like him. You know, I talk about the culture being, you know, we're not going to push people who are trouble or have big heads or going to cause headaches or, you know, we're going to cause resentment in the locker room. And Logan's not, you know, from what I've gathered. I haven't pulled everybody, but I don't have a sense I think people see Logan as dedicated and humble and professional and understanding his place, but also knowing when he's on TV that his job is stacked above everything, but behind the scenes, it doesn't carry over. And he has fallen in love and with this and gotten good enough where he could be a guy who isn't famous at all, who would be earning TV time with what he's done bell to bell and on the mic. And that's a compliment he should consider. He should consider that a big compliment because it's not often somebody who comes in with the type of celebrity that he had, as modern and unconventional as it is, compared to some of the other big celebrities over the years. He should take it as a big compliment that that's how people look at him. He earned it. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say was like, I think it was a Shawn Michaels interview or something. I think it was Shawn Michaels was saying, you know, he comes into the business, you know, not really knowing much, but he just comes in, he wants to learn. He's humble. He didn't want, you know, I think that attitude is going to take him, you know, a long way in this business as long as he wants to do it.
DIY back together. I don't think we have to talk a lot about them, but they did acknowledge it's been a few years since they were together. We had this question, I think last week, should WWE have acknowledged better if they're going to incorporate into Raw, the canon of Gargano and Ciampa having been partners before
yes.
with a tag team name, should they have, or can they still address why they stopped teaming, what they went through, and what brought them back onto the same page? Because it is jarring for people who have watched NXT during the whole takeover era and beyond to now see them just show up as if, hey, we're just reuniting.
Yeah, God, I really want them to do some sort of like a 5-minute long video package just replaying their entire feud and just everything that they went through in NXT. What was it, 2018, 2019, whatever it was. DIY and the Gargano Ciampa feud was probably some of my favorite NXT. DIY, they might have been my favorite tag team in NXT for quite some time. I Tommaso Ciampa, he's like one of my guys. So I'm like the one fan super pumped that DIY is back together. But I do wish they kind of gave a little bit more context because it's like DIY, they're reuniting after 3 years, but it's like, the fan that has been watching Raw may not be the same fan that's watching NXT. And that fan's like, well, wait a minute. I don't remember that happening 3 years ago. What are you talking about? You know, they've acknowledged that it happened in NXT, but they're not really giving us any reason to care. It's just like, oh, hey, here are these two guys that, you know, have kind of floundered around the mid card sort of, they're reuniting and, you know, they haven't really given us any sort of concrete reason to care. And considering how amazing that story was, I don't know why they're not. They really should put something together and explain why we should care about DIY. And I wish they'd do that with Ciampa in general. I think Gargano has had a bit of a better run on the main roster, but Ciampa, he's really – like he's not getting reactions and things like that. I think if they were to let him just go complete Blackheart like he did in NXT, you know, when he won the NXT title and, you know, he's clutching on to Goldie and just kind of fall back into that character and become just an amazing menacing heel on whether it be Raw or SmackDown, I think they could really capitalize on that and there'd be something there for him. But where he's kind of just been, you know, he was the Miz's sidekick and then he got hurt and then he comes back and he's kind of, he gets his music back and everything. It's just, there's been a lot of starts and stops for him on the main roster. And I think if they really want to get behind him and push him, either give us a really like, Maybe the only reason they haven't told us the DIY story yet is they're going to replay the DIY story. They're going to reunite the two of them.
Yeah.
and then maybe replay it, and maybe that's how they wind up getting Ciampa over. I don't know. That's like my ideal fantasy book right there. But
who did they do that with? Where they just replayed it rather than acknowledge it? I feel like there's a kind of a go-to example from a few years ago. But it's not. I'm not.
Yeah, it's not. It's not coming to me. It's not coming to me.
Yeah. It'll hit us like in 2 hours. Be like, oh, that's who it was. That's why they didn't acknowledge. But you're right. They might want to retell the story and not have it seem like a rerun for everyone. It's tough because sometimes, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze, you know, in terms of, you know, recapping their past. If it just, you know, they think it's not relevant and they're willing to take the hit of not addressing it in the canon of Raw because they just think, why bother? What purpose does it serve other than, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's of just, you know, satisfying the people who are like, wait a second, there's a missing chapter here. Why are they together again? We want that told. They just might be thinking, you know, for the audience we have now, it isn't worth dedicating precious TV time to tell that story if it's not important to where they're going with them. It also might be they want to tell the story again. And so that's why they're doing it. I'm trying to think if Bailey was involved in that way, where when she came up, they didn't really – people were thinking, oh, are they going to tell her story from scratch or they want to tell it from scratch in the main roster but in a different way? I'm trying to remember what the example was I have a hazy idea of. Okay. Nikki Cross, I loved it. This is like – a highlight of the show for me is her just walking slowly into the ring as Natalya's replacement partner for Tegan Nox, standing sort of in the corner, arms hanging down, staring off into space, and then walking like a zombie past. Was it Adam Pearce later, I think?
I think it was,
Walking past somebody. I've always gotten a kick out of her. She's more my sense of humor than the Kira Tozawa stuff in terms of what I think works on a comedic level because it's more dry. So I enjoyed that tonight. I don't know where they're going with it, but I thought it was fun. What do you think?
No, I'm kind of right there with you. I enjoy – so as much as I kind of liked Nikki A.S.H. and it was fun and it had its moments, this is kind of the crazy, you know, Nikki Cross is really what I've always been I gravitate towards. You know, she – like the sanity Nikki Cross, you know, back in NXT and things like that. And even, you know, in the indies and stuff. I forget what she went by on the indies stuff. I can't think of off the top of my head. So kind of to see that come back and shades of that here tonight, I'm pumped about it. I thought it was definitely hysterical. You know, and kind of leave Natty hanging and things like that. And actually I was even wondering if maybe Indy Hartwell might kind of come down and maybe jump in the corner or something like that where, you know, she wasn't, where Nikki Cross wasn't quite, available for that particular match. You know, and obviously we saw, you know, little backstage interaction between Nikki and Indy earlier in the night. But I, off the top of my head now, can't think if that match came before or after Nikki's Indy's match. But regardless, could have even been Candice because she was involved in that interaction too. I'm really looking forward to see where they're going with Nikki Cross here. Because like I said, that particular crazy Nikki Cross, I think is where she excels and where she probably feels the most at home.
All right. Then I think the last thing, unless you got anything else is, Sami Zayn and the way that they're framing him post Kevin Owens, they're talking about how Sami wants to turn a negative into a positive. He wants to show that he can be a main event singles wrestler. They're up to something here. And it could just be as simple as we want to make the best of a negative. We had to move someone over from Raw to SmackDown. It's Kevin Owens. We got an idea for KO. Sami's not going to be in a tag team. And so we'll just give him sort of a new purpose. But it could be something more, which is as a singles wrestler, fighting fair isn't working for him. So it leads to another heel turn. Or they tell a long-term story with him. They're trying to build him up as somebody who eventually, say, unseats Gunther. Could go other directions too. He's, you know, we've made it this far into the show not talking about him, but he was against Drew McIntyre. He is an integral player in what's going on with Judgment Day and the history with Jey Uso and the Bloodline. So he's another person who, again, I just really am enjoying WWE booking right now because I think they're up to something. I don't know what it is. It might be big. It might not be. But he's super talented. Fans have a real history with him and attachment to him. And I'm curious to see what happens next. And they protected him to a degree. They didn't give him a win over Drew, but obviously they had shenanigans going on, and that's WWE's way of sending a signal that they're not wanting to just define him down. They want you to still think he's someone who can hold his own against Drew. So maybe this is as simple as they've got Drew as a champion by the time May comes around next year, and they want to go Sammy and Drew headlining SummerSlam. And so they're trying to tell that long-term story arc. They might take a detour, they might not. But it could be as simple as that. They're just planting seeds. Nate, what do you think of what they've done with Sammy post-KO being moved to SmackDown?
No, so far so good. And I'm with you. I think they're definitely up to something. They keep talking about him, you know, wanting to be, or he keeps talking about himself, you know, wanting to be that champion and championship material. So there's certainly a story that they're going for here. Again, I don't know what that necessarily is either, but whatever it is, I'm going to trust Sammy, because anything I've never seen him like flop in a segment or have something where, it just didn't quite work. I feel like anytime he goes out there and even if it's, you know, a bad story or whatever, he's going to make the best of it. And his comedic timing is absolutely unbelievable. There's been just a few times now that I've watched just compilation videos of Sammy making the Bloodline corpse with just some of the stuff that he'd come out with in the ring. So he's a great talent. He's an entertaining talent. And I think any direction that they go with him, he's going to just try and make as entertaining as possible. And I'm going to be there for it because, he's one of my favorite, just kind of favorite things about really WWE as a whole. Sammy's definitely one of my favorites.
Nate, anything else you want to bring up from the show tonight?
Nothing else that comes to mind. Nothing else comes to mind.
Yeah, well, great. Well, thank you. Been great having you on. You've got a big show tomorrow, Halloween Havoc. Anything you want to say about that before we sign off here? Anything more?
No, like I said earlier in the night, PWT Talks NXT, so we'll be going live tomorrow about 10:30 Eastern time after NXT goes off the air. Call in if you'd like. Wade said earlier in the night, you can find the links to the post show in, I forget if Kelly or Bruce is doing the NXT report tomorrow night, but they'll have the link for the live show, or you can listen to the recording in the Daily Cast feed in your favorite podcast app.
Been a pleasure. Thank you, Nate, for joining me tonight.
Yes, thank you very much, as always. It's always a good time sitting down and talking shop with you, man.
Well, and I was grumpy watching a bad episode of Collision on Saturday, and I'm not going to apologize. I thought Raw's much more interesting right now of a show. It's better booked, better characters, and some good wrestling, too. We didn't talk a lot about that. Actually, we didn't talk at all about it, but the Sammy Drew match had some good quality to it, and the main event worked too with Jay and Damian stepping up. I mean, it was only 11 minutes and it was more storyline based, but you know, there's enough good wrestling to be satisfying too. I'm for sure rooting for AEW to improve, and get better in some ways that I talked about where I think there's some weaknesses on Saturday, but it's quite a turnaround. And I literally tell people sometimes like Raw's one of my favorite shows to watch and podcast about. And like people aren't watching Raw. Just if it's a text or a phone call or whatever, they're like, I can just see the look on their face, which is really, come on, really? And it's like, no, it really is. It's a fun show to watch. I'm glad Paul Levesque is stepping up and I think the rest of it are taking pride in what they're doing there with the challenge of filling a 3-hour show. So
it doesn't feel like a 3-hour slog anymore.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Nate. Thanks, callers. Thanks, emailers. Thanks, listeners. We'd love to hear from you Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday as we do more post shows this week. And send those emails in for the flagship Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. I'll be recording with Jason early tomorrow afternoon. Look for that on the blue feed later on Tuesday.